Hi, welcome back. I'm Robert Green, and I'm the host for this segment. And joining me in our studio here are Mads, Scott, and Damien. That means we're going to talk about web development. So guys, introduce yourselves, and then we'll chat a little bit, and we'll answer questions. So get those questions in.
All right, let me start. I'm Mads Christensen, and I'm a program manager on the web tools team. So we build all the HTML and CSS editors, all the MVC tooling, in Visual Studio for all the ASP.NET web developers out there, including the brand new thing we have called Browser Link, which is brand new in 2013.
Yes, excellent feature. Yeah. We saw that in the keynote. It was excellent.
So I'm Scott Hunter. I'm a program manager on the web tools team as well. All web, Azure SDKs, ASP.NET, Visual Studio, everything.
Cool.
And I'm Damien Edwards. I'm a program manager. I work for Scott. And so I'm going to be very good. So I work on the ASP.NET runtime. So various frameworks that we have, we do quite a lot of stuff now, but I focus mainly on Signaler and some of our core runtime pieces. So stuff that's in .NET framework and things like that.
Okay. So we're getting a few questions in, but let's start out by kind of reviewing what's new, just kind of high level for people that may have either not seen the keynote or haven't seen what we've discussed so far. So Mads, tell us what's new. What should people be looking out for?
Yes, let me stay within like the web space in Visual Studio. I'm sure that these guys have a lot more on the runtime and the larger holistic view. But if we're going to take a look at some core features in 2013, definitely the new HTML editor is very interesting. Because for the first time now in Visual Studio's history, we have a component that can help us tie together everything in CSS, JavaScript, even less in CoffeeScript, and HTML, so we can get a very broad web development experience. And the new HTML editor is a key component in that. And another big item is Browser Link. So this has sort of been our dream for many, many years, a way to combine the browsers and our development environment, Visual Studio, right? Ever since we started building websites way back when, it's been a very disconnected scenario. We're working in our text editors or IDE, and we have our browsers, but they don't know about each other. They don't talk to each other. Yet there are really rich ecosystems on both sides, like a lot of libraries, a lot of extensions, a lot of cool stuff, but they don't know about each other. So Browser Link, through the power of ASP.NET and SignalR, bridges the gap and basically merges the two ecosystems by creating a bidirectional connection between Visual Studio and any browser, whether it be an old version of Internet Explorer or iPhone emulator, you know, any browser without any extensions or plugins, a direct connection to Visual Studio. So now we can do some really, really, really cool things for the first time.
Yeah, cool. So explain a little bit about the bidirectional element of it.
Yeah, so basically Visual Studio is now its own WebSocket server or endpoint. So all the browsers now connect to Visual Studio. And we can send messages back and forth. And you can very easily write your own extension that either does some logic in JavaScript running in the browser and sends information to Visual Studio or the other way around. So think of it this way. Everything that the browser knows about your website can be harnessed and transferred into Visual Studio, that knowledge, and the other way around. So it is really a complete blend of the ecosystems and all the information that that has been hidden, isolated in each of them up until now.
The feature that the customers will see right in the box with Visual Studio 2013, though, is they can start developing an application, and as they have a browser window open, they can then make changes in Visual Studio and push the changes live to the browser without having to do a refresh of the browser. Right. And that can be multiple browsers. That's what's built in. You can do a lot more, and Mads's Web Essentials product actually enables a lot more today already. So
Yes. So the what people are going to see and what they're hopefully going to love is the very basic and very simple but yet powerful way of staying in Visual Studio and seeing all your browsers refresh as you make the changes. Right. So that's really, really nice.
So was there thought of extending that to SharePoint development, to Windows Store apps, phone apps, et cetera?
Yes, there has been talks about it. All these systems are a little bit different, so we're gonna attack them one by one.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Scott, a couple highlights.
The biggest thing I want to push in this release is something we called OneASP.NET. So over the years, we've built a variety of web frameworks for different needs. So we built web forms for drag and drop controls. Mm-hmm. We built MVC for people that wanted to have a clean separation of their markup and their code base. We built Web API for people that want to do RESTful endpoints, talk to devices. We've got SignalR that Damien built. It's all around doing real time. But using Visual Studio, it was always confusing that our tooling always made you feel like you had to choose
right. One
framework. And then once you made that choice, man, if I choose MVC, am I stuck? Can I not do Web API? And so one of the big pushes in this release was a terminology that we've been saying for about a year, which we call one ASP.NET, which means it's no longer, you don't have to choose one.
Mm-hmm.
So in our new file, new dialog box, you can actually choose multiple technologies, or you can choose no technologies, and then you can actually right-click on any project and say, hey, I want to add an MVC controller, and we'll go and add all the stuff to your project to make MVC work. Right, you can say, right-click on a project and say, I want to add SignalR, a SignalR hub. We'll add all the right stuff to your project to enable a SignalR real-time hub.
Right.
And so the message we want to give our customers is, you don't have to make a choice.
Right.
You can mix and max our technologies as appropriate, and that's a
or
huge push.
I want to use Web API, but I'm doing web forms.
Correct.
So right.
Or you have a legacy web form application, and you're like, hey, I want to do the newer parts of my application in MVC.
Mm-hmm.
Great, do that. I mean, all of our technologies work together and play together by design. You don't have to stick with one.
Right, that's cool.
And that's my big push for this release.
Yep. All right, Damien.
So two things really come to mind for me. One is as part of the One ASP.NET effort, we're starting to see not only the tooling sort of come together as this upfront choice thing being removed, but also the underpinnings of our frameworks. We're starting to look at commonalities that we can use to make everything plug into the same base source.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an effort in the community that started a couple of years ago called OWIN, the Open Web Interfaces for .NET. And we have an internal sort of realization of that called Katana, which is pieces of functionality that talk to OWIN or sort of abstract via OWIN into ASP.NET land. SignalR, I'm proud to say, was sort of the first framework that we wrote that was built specifically for OWIN. So we don't actually depend on ASP.NET traditional. We depend on this thing called OWIN and the Katana pieces, which is our team's implementation of the OWIN standard, if you like. And that means that we can run SignalR almost anywhere. So self-host is something we've supported from day one via OWIN. We now have an official self-host story, so we have a self-host package. You can now, via NuGet, get all the pieces that you need to self-host SignalR. But it's not just about one framework. We now have OWIN for Web API, or Web API for OWIN, I should say. So now you can have Web API and SignalR in the same application, speaking through the same pipeline, through this OWIN Katana pipeline, running in a Windows service, if that's what you want to do. So that's nice, but then we went further and said, well, what are the common pieces that applications have to use? What's the real killer app? Like, why would we even do this? Well, mm-hmm. The first thing was identity. How do you have auth configured once for your application and then used by all the various frameworks? So we did that in this version. So with our new templates, we have a completely new identity slash auth system, which has been written from the ground up with OWIN and Katana in mind. So it doesn't matter if you're using web forms, MVC, Web API, SignalR all together in the one app, they all speak the same auth
language.
That's
the big change is you can use all these things together and they all talk the same thing from the base, which is something new. Traditionally, we've kind of had web forms has its own kind of auth story. MVC's got a slightly different auth story, and the goal was to make sure you flow one story up to the entire framework.
And I will say, this is just the beginning. So this is our first round where we managed to pick one thing, and we get the underlying thing right, and then we picked one thing, which was auth, to unify. Moving forward, you'll see us pick more and more of these things that are common, and you'll see things become even more integrated, and you'll be able to share a lot more of these sort of intrinsics across the frameworks.
And not only our frameworks, but even third-party frameworks.
That's
one of the changes as well as part of this OWIN effort that we're working on is, not only as we build these components, not only they work in our frameworks, but if you have third-party frameworks that sit on top of ASP.NET as well, they'll flow into those as well.
Cool. All right, ready for some questions?
Sure, let's do it.
Shoot.
Okay, so there was a question that was on here that seems to have dropped off. It was a question from somebody who's been doing light switch and was wondering if there's going to be kind of a convergence between the light switch HTML client and the work you guys are doing. I think that was the gist of the question.
We are talking to the light switch team. There's no plans right now or any time frame for anything, but we are in Visual Studio standardizing on the components that we have. So sometimes you'll see different teams maybe have their own version of sort of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and those things are converging. So yes,
okay. Potentially.
I would assume so.
Well, I also think that we're looking at an area that's really important to us moving forward is going to be like HTML plus JavaScript client-side work. Some of the light switch stuff does some of that today.
Right.
As our tooling picks up on our side, I think you will see some blending there.
Okay. Sherry has asked, we create projects using Visual Studio Online Monaco, and I think we'll postpone that question until the Monaco guys come on later in the day. The answer is yes, but yes, of course you can. Eve's asked, I see a lot of beginning programmers struggle with ASP.NET. Will there be a boilerplate LOB template introducing them to IOC, AOP, and other patterns?
That's an interesting question. One of the things we always struggle with is that balance for our file new experience. Mm-hmm. How much do we actually prescribe in a template? And we've gone back and forth on the team over this over the past two or three releases. And we've strived to have a truly empty template. And amazingly, it took us a few versions to get a truly empty template for MVC because it's difficult. Some of these frameworks have concepts that require you to have assets in the project before they even work. And some things like this say, yeah, we could come up with a very niche, vertical sort of line of business application template, but I don't think that's the right file new experience for everybody.
Right.
So the question is more about how much, I guess, should we be investing in spending time building various types of line of business or starter kit type of things. And we've done that in the past as a team. We've had patents and practices group do things like that in the past as well. I remember back in the ASP.NET 2 days, there were some fantastic starter kits. And I think that is probably an area, admittedly, we've pulled back on a bit in the last few years. But I think moving forward is something that we should probably look at again. I know we've talked about it before.
Yeah, so. But I think you nailed it. It's how much do you put in the templates?
Right.
Do you put a lot in? Do you put dependency injection in? That's a high level, that's a really hard concept for a lot of folks. I mean, so we struggle with this all the time, finding the right balance between.
The problem with any type of framework or starter kit like that is if people don't know what the dependency injection is, they don't know when or why they would use it. Now they've got code that they didn't write that they don't really understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do you hide that from them? Now you've got a black box. It is kind of a tricky question.
I think one of the ways we did solve this in Visual Studio 2012, and we want to solve it in VS 2013 moving forward, is we want to make it very easier for third parties to actually put their templates as first-class citizens inside of our experience, which means a third party could go build one of these experiences, make it very easy to find via the Visual Studio Gallery or whatnot, or maybe in the future the File New experience actually has an easier way to go find these online templates and stuff like that. That's, I think, more of what we're going to explore in this area, so people can dial in what level they want.
Right. I mean, frankly, other people are better at doing that than us. I mean, we don't spend our days writing applications for businesses. That's not what our job is. We build frameworks for people to do that for their jobs. And so I think it's actually better served that people in the community do that work than us.
Yep. Yeah, we can already see now that a lot of people have actually done that already. Last year in February, when we did the update 2 for Visual Studio 2012, we did feature some templates on the ASP.NET website that the community wrote. And they were awesome, they were really cool. And we're gonna see a lot more of that, as Scott's mentioning. There are some efforts going on in the community right now to make it easier as well.
Okay, Zippy asks, any news on linking BrowserLink with Firebug Chrome IE DevTools?
Yes, well, it is already linked. So if you take a look at Web Essentials, then you'll see that that's exactly what is being done there. By syncing, it means if you change styles, if you change anything in the developer tools, like Firebug and Firefox or the Chrome dev tools, if you make any changes, that can be synced directly back to Visual Studio in real time. And you can see the updates happening in your CSS files and HTML files in real time. That's already out there for Visual Studio 2013 if you have Web Essentials.
Okay.
And Web Essentials basically just use the extensibility API of BrowserLink to add that feature.
Cool. And a follow-up to that from Jay Bott. How would new browsers or new versions of browsers be integrated afterwards for a browser link?
That's what's cool about browser link. It doesn't require
Signaler.
Yeah, Signaler, right? There is no, that's the whole thing. There is no extensions or plugins for browsers needed here. It uses Signaler.
Just works.
Right? It's a WebSockets and JavaScript. There's nothing fancy. It's just HTML and JavaScript, basically.
Most of the tooling that we're building with Web Essentials is actually running in your browser. So it's not it's not specific to IE or Chrome or Firefox or anything like that. That's the beauty of this model is we don't have to spend a huge tooling effort for a particular browser.
Yeah.
And we've seen similar successes even, which we've been inspired by things like Glimpse and the mini profiler for MVC that the community has done where they have in-browser, sort of in-page dashboards and telemetry and things like that, which doesn't require you to run a specific browser. It just it gathers all the information from your app as it's running, and then it pushes it into a nice experience inside your app. So.
And Surab wants to know, can Visual Studio be connected to multiple browsers at the same time?
It certainly can. It can be connected to as many browsers as you've got. And again, it doesn't matter what type of browser it is. It, you know, simulators, mobile emulators, and so on.
And that's a great use of multiple monitors. You got Visual Studio here, you got browsers over there. Yep.
Some people aren't aware of this. So if you know, for that question, when you're in Visual Studio and you're looking at the toolbar, there's a drop-down next to the browser. And that drop-down is a list of all the browsers that we find on your machine. Right. Plus, there's a link at the bottom that actually you can check multiple browsers and actually F5 or control F5 and launch a bunch of browsers at the same time. Yeah. People don't. I know a lot of people don't see that feature, but it's there.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple questions on Owen. Khalid asks, Damien mentioned other parts will be migrated to sit on Owen, like Auth. What are some other things you are looking
Good
at?
Good question. So the top contenders so far are things like Session. So what does it mean to have session state, this sort of ephemeral state that only lasts as long as you're currently on my website? At the moment, we have a session module that's tied to system web, so web forms and MVC, but it really doesn't work anywhere else. I'm not going to get into any argument about whether it should or not.
Which means if you self-host,
correct,
you lose can't. Those capabilities.
So then there's things like caching as well as a common one. And then there's sort of the intrinsics of the frameworks themselves. So in the MVC world, the core object that represents a request, the HTTP context, is tied to system web. It's the same one from web forms, but it's not the same one that you get in web API, and it's not the same one you get in Signaler. You can imagine a future where all of those frameworks would have a core context like that, that is the same type. Right. And so you can easily have a request flow through different frameworks and have them share information on the way. Then there are common concerns that we actually don't solve very well today at all, like dependency injection and IOC container integration. So again, MVC has its own DI story. Web API has it, Signaler has its own story, right. And you can configure one container for all three, but guess what? You're configuring it three times.
Right.
So we would love to be able to do a single DI/IOC story as well.
Diagnostics is another example.
Tracing and diagnostics.
We do it differently for web forms versus MVC versus web API versus SignalR. Mm-hmm. How do we take all these common building blocks that we've kind of like scattered in our frameworks, pull them out of the frameworks, pull them down into Owen, and then share them across the entire ecosystem? I saw part of the question as well, which was, how do you get some information about the Owen stuff?
Right.
Howard Durking wrote a great article that's in the MSDN magazine, which you can find online. At msdn.microsoft.com on the Katana work and from the lowest level up to the frameworks.
And I will say everything that we've done in that space is open source. So if you want to go and look at the source and you can get nightly builds, you can see basically our developers working on it as they check in. When they check in to public source control. Nothing is hidden here.
Okay. Of course, that's our whole team. Everything our team does today works that
Pretty
way.
Much, yeah,
we don't do anything that's not open anymore. Yep. So
that was Stefan's question about how do you get a beginner's look at Owen and show how the changes in philosophy translate from old skills to new skills. So the answer is check Howard's article on MSDN Magazine. It's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Okay, ArisDev asks, I have a Web API 2 service and I want to communicate to a web client when some specific service is consumed, i.e. some data changes. Can I do this using SignalR?
Yes, you can. So there's no reason you can't use these two things together. So we often get the question of, well, I'm using SignalR, so I have a hub, which means the client can call the server, and obviously, importantly, the server can call the client. That's kind of the point. But if I have that, why do I need any other type of endpoint to allow clients to talk to the server? Well, the reason is that SignalR is a client-server technology. We have code that you have to integrate on the server, and then we have code that we ship that you have to integrate in the client, which means that if you want to have the broadest reach possible for allowing different clients send or query information from your server, Web API is the way to do that. That's exactly what it's designed for. It's designed for pure HTTP and RESTful type patterns using HTTP's intrinsics. SignalR is about, let's build on top of HTTP, and then for a smaller subset of clients, like browsers, .NET clients, we now support Xamarin clients as well as of the release out today. We can do real-time updates. We're still using HTTP under the covers, but you're not going to get some of the HTTP semantics that you may be able to get with Web API, because we kind of take over control of the HTTP-ness and we exploit it in order to push stuff back down, because unfortunately, other than WebSockets, which we do utilize, HTTP just doesn't really have that capability of push. So in terms of integrating them together, you can absolutely have your client make a connection to a SignalR endpoint in your application and then have it post to web API endpoints or indeed have other clients posting to web API. And then simply on the server side, you'll relay that information back from your web API hub or controller, I should say, and post those updates back down to the client through the hub that you've written in your class. So,
okay. So I'll ask a question about web API while we wait for additional questions to come in. So let's say I'm a client-side developer and I've been building WCF services for quite some time, and maybe I've dabbled with OData services. And now web API seems to be very popular. I see it all over the place. Should I stop building WCF services and switch over to web API? Should I rewrite my existing SOAP-based services to web API? Is it just another tool in the toolbox? Is it the way to go? What am I to make of this?
I think it depends on what you're doing. If you're, for example, WCF was based on SOAP. Mm-hmm. There are not good SOAP clients for iOS or Android or Windows Phone necessarily.
Right.
And so web API addresses that because it's based on JSON, which JSON support exists everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you actually have machines that are talking to each other that use SOAP today, SOAP is fine. The reason something like web API becomes the new kind of thing for us is because we were trying to target devices that don't necessarily have a SOAP stack on them.
Okay.
But if all the machines in your organization are capable of doing SOAP, there's no reason to just move to web API. All you're doing is changing your transport protocol from one thing to another with no huge benefit coming there.
Okay.
It's really about attaching to devices.
Okay, so let's say I've got an internal line of business app that uses a WCF service. Now I want to move it to the cloud. So I can move the data to Azure, I can just take the WCF service and publish it on an Azure website, and then I can expose it to clients. But now I want that service and data to be accessible from all devices. So at that point, I would want a web API front end. So how would I handle that kind of transition? What would be a best practice for that?
You have two choices there. You can actually do REST over WCF. Mm-hmm. You just have to fight it a little bit because WCF tries really hard to hide HTTP in the protocol from you.
Right.
You can run REST over that if you want. I would suggest if it's easier, play with it, see which model's easy for you.
Okay.
Maybe you add some new web API REST front ends just for your devices.
Okay.
And slowly transition. But in general, we hear all these questions about, when we created MVC, am I supposed to move all my web form applications to MVC? Just because Microsoft comes up with a new framework, that does not mean you need to throw your other framework under the bus and move to the next thing.
Right.
Do it as appropriate. Do it when there's a need. Don't just do it because it's the new thing.
Okay. Cool. I think we've got time for one or two more. Raj asks, how many clients can be connected via SignalR to the server simultaneously?
That's the how long is a piece of string question. I'm happy to share numbers that are completely meaningless, other than we've seen them in our own labs for stuff to give people an indications. It's thousands and tens of thousands. But it all depends on what you're doing. So if the connections are completely idle, so if you simply have a test where you just connect a bunch of clients and they just sit there and do nothing, on an 8 gigabyte server, sort of a fairly modern server with 8 gig of RAM, quad core, you can expect to get over 100,000 idle connections sitting there before the machine starts running out of RAM. RAM becomes your limit when you start adding lots of connections and keep them open. Mm-hmm. WebSockets is the most efficient. It has the lowest overhead on the server in terms of memory for concurrency. And then service end events, which are the various transports that SignalR supports under the covers. Once you start sending data over those connections, then all bets are off. It all depends on what you're sending, how you send it, how big it is, how complex it is, the frequency that you do it, the number of clients that you have. And that's no different to scaling web apps. It's like saying, how well does this web technology scale? Well, what are you going to do with that web technology? I did a talk at Build this year, which is about nothing but scaling SignalR. So I suggest that people watch that because I go into a lot of the theory behind it and some of the patterns you can use to do mass scale.
But great point. I mean, even we were doing some web API testing last year, and we easily saturated network cards. So as Damien said, if you want to send like 5 or 10 bytes, great. You start sending a meg, boom, the network card suddenly becomes your bottleneck. So there's so many things. So many variables.
But we work very hard to make it as fast and as efficient as possible.
Right. Okay. All right. Looks like we're out of time. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Thanks, everybody, for your questions. And we'll be back. And in our next segment, we're going to talk about the IDE. So we'll see you in a few minutes.